Welcome to the FTSE Russell Convene series. Today I'm joined by Greg Brown, professor at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Kenan Flagler Business School, and we will be delighted to speak with him on private markets. Follow us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. A very warm welcome, Greg. Delighted to have this session on private capital with you.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Give us a little information about what you're doing and a little bit about the journey that brought you till this point.
So I've been an academic researcher, faculty member at UNC for more than 25 years now. Came straight out of my PhD program to be an academic researcher and a teacher. I started out as sort of a risk management type person. That turned into an interest in alternative investments. And lately I've been doing private equity and private fund research mostly. It's certainly been an interesting journey to have an academic career for 25 years.
Any pivotal moment in your career that you say might have had a tremendous impact subsequently?
I mean, for me, I think it was the financial crisis, in 2008. And I would say, as an academic, I think I was a little bit embarrassed for the profession and sort of how flat-footed academics were in the response to the financial crisis, just in the sense that I think we were as shocked as everyone in terms of just, you know, what the systemic risks were that were in the financial system that were largely unknown. And I think there wasn't a good understanding of things like, private label RMBS and CDOs and just, you know, how big they had gotten and how risky they were. For me, that was a sign that I think, you know, academics really needed to take a more active role in trying to understand current issues and what important topics were. And hopefully there aren't other systemic risks, out there, but certainly having an eye towards kind of what's current and forward looking versus just, you know, sort of historical backward looking empirical work.
That brings us to the interesting point. You mentioned what's happening currently. It's very important to kind of keep an eye out on that. So when people talk about the general outperformance in private markets, now let's say specifically in public equity related to private equity with private equity outperforming, is it only a question of the leverage returns to having leverage, or is there something deeper that's driving these outperformance in private markets?
This is a question that's being pretty actively debated. I think a fairly strong opinion that private markets are not simply just, you know, sort of levered up public assets. And maybe the most obvious place to see that is venture capital, right? Because, I mean, venture capital doesn't have any leverage for the most part, mostly unlevered investments, yet they're still very risky, right? We know that they're quite risky. It's just the nature of investments are different, right? Those are companies that just aren't ready for public markets yet. And, you know, maybe that's too obvious of an example, because obviously buyout space is quite a bit different than venture capital. But I think when you look at the companies that are privately held now, and even the companies that were publicly held and taken private, they're different, right? They tend to have safer underlying asset characteristics. Especially the companies that are taken private tend to, you think of them as having lower asset betas. But I think private equity brings other things to the table in terms of, you know, how the assets are managed. And sort of the paradigm that's being used now to describe what private equity does is along three dimensions. One is, you know, financial issues. So think of it as like financial operations and governance. Another is sort of the true underlying operational issues for a company. And the third is sort of a governance thing. And I guess the way I think about it is sort of the governance is the most important one, because you're going from something that's sort of broadly held in public markets, let's say, to something that is a concentrated ownership position. So you're kind of doing away with some of the traditional agency issues that are there. And then that lets you undertake sort of financial and operational engineering. Financial is definitely part of it, right? We sort of have done studies to try to understand where returns come from, and leverage is definitely part of that. But there's also a lot of operational improvement. And I think as private equity has evolved over time, or at least the buyout space has evolved over time, there's been a movement away from the bulk of the gains coming from financial engineering towards more operational and growth types of strategies.
That's a very interesting observation on the operational issues and the nature of companies being different in these two spaces. Digging deeper into other parts of private markets, do you think there's an inherent shift that's going on, let's say, from private equity to private credit and maybe from real estate to infrastructure?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, you know, infrastructure and private credit have just been, you know, on fire lately. I mean, just the amount of fundraising that's happening there has just really been astronomical. And in both cases, yeah, the growth has been post financial crisis, right? It's really been the last 10 years, 15 years or so. But I think there's different reasons there. I think in private credit, you know, what's happening is that there's been a regulatory reason for this in the sense that banks, you know, pulled back from at least doing the riskiest part of lending and sort of buyout space. I think that gave lots of good ideas to people for other things they might do and sort of led to, you know, innovations in terms of deal structuring and, you know, other sorts of services that private credit lenders might provide. In infrastructure, I think it's a bit different. I think there it was maybe driven as much by sort of a search for yield and that, you know, people saw that there were these large kind of institutional quality assets out there that could be put into portfolios and managed in a way that was quite competitive with real estate returns and public fixed income returns, for example. Now, are they going to displace real estate and buyouts? I don't think so. I think we'll continue to see growth in real estate private funds and in buyout funds, but they're certainly growing much faster. And I know that some people who are much more knowledgeable about this space than me in industry say that private credit could get to be as large as private equity, right? And I think the same could be said of infrastructure and real estate. You know, I think, you know, just the growth in the number and the size of funds and infrastructure could have them, you know, exceed the committed capital in private real estate. Lots to watch and keep track of there for sure.
Indeed. Which brings us back to another question on private equity. Like we talked about how it has been having outperformance over public equity, mm-hmm. but we also know there are changes going on. There's a stalling in the exit activity. So what would you say is the current status of private equity?
Yeah, I mean, I wish I knew in some sense, right? Because it's really hard to tell, right? I mean, like we're not really going to know until we see a pickup in exit activity, right? The returns have not been terrible in buyout land. I mean, venture has had some, you know, sort of double-digit negative returns, as you would sort of expect from a very risky asset class, and tech in particular, you know, getting whacked around after, you know, sort of a pretty bubbly period through 2021. It's just hard to know, right? That are the current returns in buyout space, are they because things haven't been marked down that should be marked down? Or is it just because it's been a difficult time to exit and so the valuations are good? I mean, the exits we've seen have actually been reasonably good valuations. And so it isn't like people have been forced to take, you know, big haircuts when they have made exits, at least in the buyout space. But maybe that's because only the good deals have exited so far. So I think we will know a lot in 3 or 4 or 5 years when these things finally, you know, sort of transact. It's getting to be late stage for some of these funds in the sense that they, you know, are contractually obliged to start returning capital. And we've seen sort of the average hold period for buyout funds really extend tremendously over the last few years. I'm certainly, as a researcher, anxious to see, you know, if the outperformance of buyout funds will, you know, persist as we see sort of these more recent vintages start to liquidate.
So timing is critical and keeping an eye out on the next 4 to 5 years
is
critical.
Yeah. When you are committing capital now, right, it's money that's going to go to work in, you know, over the next 5 years or so. I mean, I think in some ways it's probably a good time to be committing capital if you think that there's going to be funds that are forced to exit positions that they may not want to exit and valuations aren't going to be great. So, you know, it's a very sort of long run asset class in the sense that you're making sort of these blind pool commitments, you know, for many years. And so, you know, the money you commit today isn't going to actually go into the ground for several years probably. And then it's going to, you know, be another 10 years potentially before you see the exits from that.
Indeed. Now, tying this all back into the macro environment, obviously the last 2 years, everything mm-hmm. has been about inflation and mm-hmm. rates.
Yeah.
So coming back to the question of inflation, do you think there are key differences in the inflation sensitivity of public markets and private markets?
Yeah, I don't think so in sort of the equity space, but I think in the real asset space, there probably is. We've been doing some research on this recently and looking at infrastructure funds in particular. What we've done is say, okay, let's take a public market infrastructure index. We can obviously see what's inside of that, you know, what industries, what type of companies, geographies. It's harder to do that for private funds because, you know, just the data isn't as readily available for what's in private infrastructure funds. But we've been able to collect the holdings of at least the largest infrastructure funds and sort of classify what's inside of those funds. What we find is that there is a difference in geography. It's a little more tilted. Private funds are a little bit more tilted towards European than the public indices. And then also on the industry side, you see sort of less exposure to communications, utilities, and private funds, and more in industrial space. People who know the private fund space think, oh, well, that's a little suspicious, maybe. Like, what's an industrial infrastructure company? Are you know, these big asset managers just sticking buyout deals inside of infrastructure funds and calling them infrastructure? But when we look at the actual deals, we do see that they are things that are like marine, you know, port services or airport services or things that look like they're at least, you know, related in a way to infrastructure type assets, but perhaps more operational and service oriented than a toll road, you know, or a utility, you know, traditional utility. In that sense, we think that part of the relatively good performance we've seen in private infrastructure the last couple of years may be related to the pricing power that some of these services companies have versus kind of traditional utilities or traditional, you know, kind of public-private type assets. And then we also think that the duration of these assets is probably quite a bit lower. And because there's been such a big increase in real rates, you know, some of the real estate and infrastructure assets that have sort of very long, you know, cash flow duration have been more adversely impacted by those big increase in real rates versus, say, a services company that's going to have a shorter duration of cash flows and more inflation, you know, ability to adjust revenues to inflation pressures more easily.
So that's interesting. So pricing power, duration, geographic exposure, and industry exposure.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces, but we think we can explain kind of what these return differences are being caused by. Yeah,
that's very interesting. One more question that really fascinates us, see FTSE Russell being, we have indices in different asset classes. So the whole issue of investability is very important, mm-hmm. right? Yeah. So coming to the question of scale or capacity or diseconomies of scale or economies mm-hmm. of scale, what kind of differences do you see and, you know, your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, it's a question that I think is front of mind for a lot of people that are thinking about increasing exposures to private markets, right? Because there's this question of, you know, how much room do they have to grow, right? So especially if you're, say, moving in, you know, massive amounts of, say, retail money, say, you know, you start seeing big allocations from either, you know, high net worth individuals or even, you know, there's been talk about having private funds allocation inside of DC plans, right? So, you know, could the private fund industry absorb another $5 or $10 trillion of capital? I mean, that's a really interesting question. Some people believe that returns have moderated in asset classes and buyouts in particular. So we actually just did a study that was Institute for Private Capital study looking at the relationship between scale in different strategies and returns. And what we found is that there is clearly variation, time variation in performance by asset class across all of the private asset classes. But there don't seem to be meaningful trends, and especially downward trends over time. There was a dip in performance around the global financial crisis for most of these asset classes, but they've done quite well the last 10 years. So it doesn't seem like as the assets in, say, buyout space or venture space have increased dramatically over the last decade, that there's been, you know, substantially lower returns. Now, we also look at sort of the growth at the GP level or even the fund level. So when a GP increases the amount of money that it's managing and from one fund to the next, does that lead to lower performance? We also don't find much there. It doesn't seem to matter, you know, one way or the other. It's kind of counter to what a lot of people's intuition has been, and even some of the folklore in the industry, but there's just not strong results there. So I would say, I can't say for sure that, you know, the industry could absorb another $5 or $10 trillion in assets, but at least to date, the growth has not resulted in sort of obviously lower performance.
So much more room to go in the near future.
Well, Leah, I think the industry certainly hopes that's the case. And there's been a bit of a pause in fundraising lately. So we, you know, probably going to be resetting off of a lower base over the next 5 to 10 years.
Fascinating insights, Greg. Thank you so much for sharing your insights with us.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.